I'm just outside Ballinamorrid here with Mervyn Byers. And Mervyn, I'm talking to you about your experience and about your days, I suppose, during the Troubles. But before I do that, just tell me a little bit about your own family. Your father,
he
was living. No, just tell me the background there.
My father and mother, they lived in outside Cavan, 15 mile outside Cavan, in the village of just outside Ballyjames Duff, and they had a farm up there, that 90 acres, and we were all reared up there. That I had four brothers and two sisters, and father and mother just decided that to come up to Fermanagh. In about 1971.
And why?
Why? There was a number of things, maybe, what we found out afterwards. At the time, we thought they were just they wanted a change of land or better. But there was a lot of threats against my father, and I will be showing you later on that he has a threatening letter here that we got after he died. My father died on the 12th of May, 3 years ago. And when we were going through...
What was your dad's name?
My dad's name was Thomas Robert Byers. And we were looking through, you know, where he kept old stuff and all, and we came across this threatening letter, so we were quite surprised. And then when we started looking in, maybe with the eldest brothers and sisters to chat, there was a threat against him, and he decided, well, we're better up here in the north and walking down there, because it was a wee area of a small area of Protestants, but... again, up there down around Cavan, he decided that he had enough, and he come up here, and he come up here around about 1970, bought a farm here, and it took a while to sell his own farm in outside Cavan, and when he got it sold, we moved up here. Mm-hmm. And we're up here now from 71.
And what age were you when
I'd only been about 7 or 8. Eight, I think it was, and then I started primary school up here. Brothers, my other brothers, they went to school, they were in boarding school in the Royal School in Cavan. Winston, Gerald, and Sadie, and my other brother, John, he spent a year before he had just started in Royal School when they started moving up. Mm-hmm. So then he moved up here and started school up here. But they were boarded in Royal School.
I see. And so then you're... growing up, because then, you know, you were dealing with the Troubles all the time.
But people would say to us, what took you coming up at the height of the Troubles? I remember young, and we used to come down here maybe on a weekend when I had the farm here before, and then go back back home again. I remember thinking they were born in Hastings at the time. And a lot of hatred, and we remember the thing mother saying, you could smell the smell of hay being burnt, and we was thinking, we're still sort of young, but father always had this notion. He was always into Protestant, because he always came up for the 12th of July, even when he was down in Cavan, he still always came up for the 12th of July and then back down again. I think I heard mother saying they must have got a few drinks, but he smashed the car on the way home from the 12th one time. I remember mother telling us that there. But my father was always great interest, and then he joined the one job up here.
But were people burning the hay, as you say?
Yeah, burning was hay that time of year, so that type of year.
So it was. So that intimidation all the time was...
It was a lot of intimidation. Yeah. When you look back on the whole thing now, you can see what they were doing. They were pushing Protestants from the border, and especially from Anna, and pushing them closer into the safe towns. Yeah. You know, that's what they were sort of working on.
So what happened to the farm then, there?
The farm we sold. We sold to a man from Dublin. He was a horse dealer, dealt in horses. And we had a good farm down there, 90 acres. And we come up here and we bought 60 acres. And then we bought another wee farm. So it brought us up to a farm of 15 acres. So we end up with 75 acres up here.
Mm. And you can see it's a lovely place.
Yeah.
And originally that big house on the hill, that was your...
That was the whole place.
Who built that house originally?
That was a story and a half, and then I renovated that when I got married and took over the farm.
But the family who built it originally...
We bought this farm of Jim and Babs Hawthorne, a brother and sister. And they moved away to Belfast. They dealt with hens. They were farming more hens, and then they let out. So we let out the land here before we moved up. With those neighbours took the land, and then we moved up. We started to farm. Mother wasn't always like to look back in Cavan. My whole relatives are still down there. So my mother was buyers as well. So I'm a true buyers. So she was buyers from Killincare, outside Bailaborough. And we still go down to the relatives down there now.
Imagine, yeah. And so but you had to settle in and make a living, and your family, your father and mother reared you.
Yeah.
So what did you do then when you left school?
I left school, I went to the college. I was going to go home. When I finished school, I went to the agriculture college. I'd sit in Skilling, and when I finished, I'd done a year there, and I thought, this is the bee's knees, I'll go home to farm. My father just had his own ideas, and we sort of thought, no, this is not working out, because father always had different ideas, and I had my ideas. So I decided to join part-time UDR. So I seen in the local paper, join part-time. They get a lot of parent to come in. So the recruiting sergeant come out to us and come out to me, and he says, you know, he says, you'd be better off joining full time. And I said, not the hope that I want to join full time. But he talked me into it. And on the 14th of February, 1982, I headed for 6 week training in Ballykenner. So I went to training, and it was, you know, it's just typical army training. I thought this was a total culture shock for me, being used to under mother's wing and being ordered around. So I come home the weekend, and didn't want to go back, but the doctors didn't go back in. So that's where I made my start with join the UDR. So I spent the whole 22 years in the UDR and Royal Irish. We changed over to a 12-year point. We went to the Royal Irish to change it.
So you must have experienced a lot of...
I experienced a lot
of difficulties,
Mars, because when I joined, I was on the road. It was about checkpoints done. It didn't suit an awful lot with trying to farm and things. So I thought, no, this doesn't really suit me. So in reality, I resigned from the UDR. But at that time, you give 28 days notice. So at 20 days, they come to me and said, would I be interested in staying on and going to the store job and get a lot more time to do the farm. So I stayed on the store job. So I spent 2 years in it, and then a new commanding officer came over and he says, oh, you're much too young to be inside. So he put me back on the road for 6 months, and then we went, there's an annual camp that you call it, it was a sort of rest period. You go over to England for a week, and that was an annual camp. So I went done training over there, and I ended up doing enemy with the fellas, and ended up going into intelligence. And I spent 18 years inside doing intelligence.
What was that like?
I enjoyed that, Morris, because it was very good, because we were dealing with the army. The army was coming over here, and they thought we were the bee's knees, because they couldn't understand us living among them and among the terrorism. How? Just give you an example. There was a bit of suspicious activity down outside Cash, and this army fella come in, this has to be all searched and has to be all checked out. And I said, do you mind me asking, where is it? And he pointed on the map where it was. So I says, oh, I know a fella doesn't live far from that. He's a part-time UDR fella, and he's a postman. So I left the phone, and I spoke to Stewardy, and I said, Stewardy, will you take a wee run down? The army has come across something. They reckon it was a possible hide. It's not far away, and I showed him where it was. And he come back up, he says, no, Mervyn, you know what that is? The BT telephone boys is after lifting the whole poles, and there's a hole left in the ground. And that's what they thought was a possible hide. So I brought the officer, and I says, that's sorted, why? And I says, we've got a fella that has BT a pole, and he just couldn't get over on the understand the contacts we had, how we knew everybody. So that's what, that give you the idea. So mainly what my job was to brief the army coming into Fermanagh and telling them the sort of the area they're working in and who to look out for and who to... That was my job. It was very interesting. Unfortunately, you had to deal with a lot of different incidents. you know, incidents involved.
Of course you did. Mm. And you had, you know, you had the knowledge, I suppose, yeah, of the local knowledge.
The local knowledge. That's the thing. The army always had this idea, Mars. They come over for 6 months. They're going to sort the peace out in 6 months. They had this great idea. But when they got settled in about three months, they thought, this is not working out as what we expected.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all the all is about. But then they thought we were the main ones of to deal with. We thought that they couldn't understand us living among them and carrying on.
Talk to me about the day that Joe Mills was shot. Well, you were sent out to, you know, when the attack on his truck.
Yeah,
you were sent out to see it afterwards.
Yeah, Joe, we always thought there was a threat against Joe around most of the time, ours and we never thought they would take on Joe because Joe was a respected businessman in Trillick. And there's, I know a lot of men that night when Joe was shot, there was a lot of men not sitting at the window of a pub because they reckoned there was maybe retaliation offered. Look, thankfully there wasn't. But when I went out to see Joe, and Joe was trained. That's the way they were trained if you're attacked. And Joe went through the motions, but Joe panicked a wee bit and he ended up not getting rounds off towards them. But Joe, when we seen the lorry rattle, we thought, how did this man survive? Just couldn't believe it now. But there's another, you know, there is another couple instances, and there's a dog warden. I'll tell you about Eric Glass worked as a dog warden part-time, and me and Eric get on so well, and Eric we got information saying that Eric was going to be shot, they're going to be taken out somewhere. And we thought he'd be taken out at the dog compound outside Enniskillen. But lo and behold, Mars, the terrorists took over a house in Baleek.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the talk through the whole thing went. They took over a house outside Baleek. They phoned the town hall and said the dog bit their niece at the weekend. Could the dog warden come out?
Mm-hmm.
And, right, we'll get the dog warden to ring you. So Eric Glass rung the house and spoke to a terrorist, because that's who answered the phone, and he didn't know what that was. And he says, the dog's bit my niece at the weekend, I want you to come out and put it down. And Eric says, did you not ring the local vet in Edina? He says, we tried it, but he can't come out. So Eric, right, he says, I'll be out about 10:30. So off Eric went, Daniel, and headed down the Bow Island, headed that direction towards the house. He got a call on the radio, and he answered the call, pulled in and answered the call. For some unknown reason, he took his personal PPW, personal protection weapon, out and poured it between his legs. And he drove on down towards the house. And as he driving in towards the house, there was a wheelbarrow in the middle of the yard. And Eric thought that was a bit funny. But he swerved around it and drove on down. But the idea, when you look back on it, the wheelbarrow, he was supposed to stop at the wheelbarrow, but he upset the whole apple cart. He drove down the van down into the yard. A boy came out with a mask shouting, IRA, IRA, get out. So Eric lifted the PPW, bang, bang, shot him dead.
Yeah.
So he did. And then more
shot you, not the IRA.
The terrorists, they were shouting, shouting, come out. And he said, Eric then got out just as you just went through the training that he was trained in Mars, and he took cover, and then another couple more terrorists came out, opened up fire, but they heard the shots, they panicked.
Yeah,
he says they jumped over walls and everything and run, but they fired a lot of shots, and Eric got down in behind the van and put off another couple of shots, but terrorists disappeared across the border. So
okay, so that man that was shot at, what was his name? What was his name again?
The
dog warden.
Eric Glass.
Eric Glass.
Eric Glass.
So his life was saved.
His life was saved by his training. And, you know, thankfully, you know, normally, Mars, that if you were being ambushed, like Joe, you don't get a chance like that. Eric got a chance. And when we look back on the incident afterwards, they want to tie him up.
So you're the man that turns up to
incidents,
incidents like that, and you see the aftermath.
Yeah.
And does that damage you? Does that traumatize you, even though you're a trained soldier?
Yeah. It does. When it starts hitting on your doorstep.
And you know the people.
Yeah, you know the people. That's the annoying thing about you. You come out, you know, the couple of different ones have been outed, you know, when you go, which has survived it. I remember an ordinary civilian there, a fella, Desi, God rest him, he's dead now. But Desi Kilk rung me to the office one morning. He says, Mervyn, he says, could you come out to the house? I think there's something under the car. And went out, and so we looked underneath it, on the vehicle booby trap, sitting, just looking at us, and we couldn't believe it. Just that, and then looking off, he happened to see a wee silver thing hanging down when he was coming out, and thankfully it saved his life.
So were you targeted yourself, because they obviously knew your position?
Yeah, no, thankfully not, no, because what would save my thing, when I left, when I learned my 22 years, Morris, and went in for my last interview, and the command officer says, oh, well, you've done it for 22 years, well done, would you like to stay part-time? And I says, I've got this far, I think a lot of people didn't know that it was in the job, because it was inside most of the time, and was never out on the ground facing them.
But that's interesting. You should say that. I'm fascinated that you weren't known, I suppose. Yeah. But were you? You knew everything that must have been going on at the time.
Yeah, that's right.
So it was extraordinary. And did this play in your mind, did you have to be very? Stand back a little bit from it.
You had this. You were sort of learning. You know, there was dealing. You were dealing with a lot of suspects and boy sympathizers, and you were sort of watching them. And you were part. I find the part time soldier was a great man. He was my eyes and ears on the ground.
Yeah.
Because he was a postman, he was a milkman, he was a busman, and they were sort of in on the ground, and they would phone maybe and say, Mervyn, such and such is working at such and such house, you know, and you get that, and people say, how do you find that all out? Which is a great thing in a way, Morris, because I always think you're the forced to know.
Okay.
Forced to know.
Where did the Inniskillen bombing?
Inniskillen bomb, I was there.
You were there, yeah. Tell me where exactly.
Inniskillen bomb, that was we were ready to move off down the Boham Car Park, lined up. It was the only parade we put on the uniform once a year, because that with us not wearing uniform during the ordinary working time hours. So we put on the number twos, sitting ready to roll. The big drummer and the band was late.
Yeah.
And that's what saved us. But we were ready to move off, and then the big drummer and the bang went. And we all sort of seen the smoke going up in the air, and we all run, and we panic wee bit. I says, I remember coming back and said, what is if there's another device? This is a sort of come on, but Morris, when you would have went up, you knew there was no going to be no other device, because the majority of people was crushed and against. You know the footpath there, and there's a rail around a footpath, and the bomb was behind it, and it crushed an awful lot. And it was stuck in your mind a right bit now, because you were seen it. What you were there at the scene, you know.
And did you have to attend to the lying, the dying?
Yeah, we all sort of went in with you can see obviously the video of it. We went in and lifted off as much rubble of things, and people, up the mountain, people crying and shouting. And it was, you know, it was just, you know, you think you see it on TV, you never think you see it for yourself, you know.
Yeah. Did that make you bitter?
It did in a way, you know, we thought hit Membrane Sunday. What has Membrane Sunday got to do with us? You know, really, it's Membrane. It's the war heroes you're looking after.
First World War.
You know, first and second. That's what you are. And, you know, it sort of did thing. And I'd say because of Wilson, your man Wilson, got the daughter killed, with the statement he made, he said he prayed for them. And I'd say that saved a lot of more... made people think there could be more done. Could have been more done.
But did that not maybe work the opposite way and make people even more angry that he should come out with a statement like that?
There's a lot of victims, Morris said, he shouldn't have said it because he wasn't speaking for the victims. There's a lot of people lost. Like I know Sam got Sammy Galt was got the was the, they knew he was a retired sergeant, and I know the two sons had done best man for one of the sons, and they were quite annoyed about what Wilson came out with. You know, when he spoke, but I think the poor man was in shock.
Yeah.
And I think the media just, and soon he said that, bang, worldwide, just hit the headlines, and nobody could speak then after that. You know.
Now, Mervyn, in your position, because you were still working in intelligence, you were there, you must have had some idea who did this and why did it, you know. What did you do?
I don't see. The idea what we were thought why the Dars's brother was a dog handler, and he was involved, he'd done the searching of the town before, the night before, but they were never allowed in the into them reading rooms because it was a Catholic, and it was showing sort of being bitter that we were searching in around there. I could never understand why the let the bomb go off with no warning. I think there was it had to be put down very amateur. And we think then back on with another one to go off at Tullyhaman at the same time, and it was more of a command wire, so they were still sitting. They would have been sitting at the bomb, so they were going to time it right to hit. We reckon it was maybe for the clearance patrol more than. I know the media has poured down that it was children and parents and all that, but I think it was more for the clearance. But with this one, this was a hold all put in the reading rooms, Mars, and with a timer. And they were going to, it didn't matter who they were going to hit. They were going to hit civilians and. But where we were going to be standing, they were going to hit us. You know, like there was a couple of 80 or 90 of us on parade. You know.
Yeah.
That was a big thing.
Your life was spared, whole lot of other people died.
Like it really targeted a lot of civilians. Mm. You know, the military wasn't hit.
Yeah.
You know, the target that they went for wasn't there because the ban was late.
Yes.
You know, and it was it's a blessing, but the people around in Skilling, it would annoyed a lot of ordinary Catholics.
Yeah.
You know, to do that. You don't it's like the Oma bomb was done on the 15th of August. Mm-hmm. When I heard the Oma bomb was on the 15th of August, that's always, in my eyes, that's always a Catholic celebrates that day, and I says, that's the loyalists, they have to hit Oma. And when information started coming through, it ended up, it was a continuity, we dealt with it, done that one. But again, clearing the town, put the people down where the bomb was, they cleared the town the wrong way that time, you know, and they put them all down where the bomb was that time. But back to the remembrance Sunday night, like, a lot of people was annoyed, you know, when the funerals, and you know, I still to this day still get involved with the Remembrance Sunday, because that day after that they asked me to do collection on the, because we had a second remembrance, and after that I've done ushering in the church since that.
Have you?
I've done that, and people say, well, you're doing that some length of time, you know, and I still put on my suit and my medals and I do the ushering. And it's proud day for everybody, because it's going to, saying that more, is a great day for renewing friendship with your old ex pals, you know, that you work with.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So do you see yourself then as a proud Ulster man?
I would think I've done my bit for the I still look back on down south and my relatives down there. I remember we weren't allowed to go south. So we weren't allowed at all, because my brother, John, was on the police. My mother's mother died. And normally what you do, I could work it out, Morris, you have to set up a pattern. For them to get you, you have to be a bus driver. You have to be lifting the children at that certain time. Milkman, you have to be doing the thing. Postman, you have to be there. And I always think, my granny died, I'm going to slip down, go to the funeral, and slip back out. So I mangled among the crowd. John, he was the police. He went through the guards and got protection. And I remember standing in the crowd, and they said, there must be some of the members of security forces here, because I see the guard of care sitting up the back lane. And that was ordinary. That was the neighbours talking about it. It highlighted you too much. I thought my own eyes.
I know.
You're better off going down there.
Did anything happen in that?
No, not yet. Yeah. Just in and out. But remember, when I would go down the odd time, I remember my aunt saying, oh, put a hat on you because your short hair will show you up. Going that alone maybe for going down to see me. They were more nervous. And I have an Aunt Sadie down in Athy. And she always, when she come down to visit my mother here in the north, she always had to get out of the north before darkness because she thought there was trouble. And they got my relatives got a different view of things. They thought we were sitting on the border shooting at each other. They didn't think that you could carry on a normal life up here.
Did you think it was normal?
Oh yeah, we would have thought normal. The only difference you had was the unnormal bird. It was the checking the cars. Then you had to check your car, and then when your children started young, and they'd maybe looking for you as well, just more young when they were small. What are you looking for, Daddy? You know, things like that. There, that's the only thing. But you had to not look over your shoulder, but you just had to watch where you were going. You know, and like now, like we're living in a peace situation now, and I'm delivering oil. To border towns,
yeah,
and I know there's an odd boy looks at me and think, and he'd smile and say,
"You still feel that way? Just nervous about
you do be really nervous.
Pants out with a gun,
you know. You're not nervous. You just think there is a like I know when I delivered oil and I know we delivered oil to a fellow. He'd been a terrorist. So I know he's blood in his hands and he'd ask, where are you from? What do you do?" And I said, I always got away well. I'm a farmer. I always work because a farmer covered all. And what kind of farming do you do? And, I do such and such. And then you could talk about farming. All right. You know, he says.
That's interesting.
And then he'd say, you know, we have up this country. And I says, no, I'd never be in this country. You know, we were known as the hardest men in Fermanagh. This man told me. And I said, oh, yes. And he says, there's checkpoints over there and checkpoints over there. And me knowing that I would have visited them checkpoints in my day too.
Oh, my God.
But this day, I would know that he would, and then he knows I've changed oil companies.
Yeah.
And he'd see me delivering oil in that town and just smile and say, and look at you. And that's all he'd do. He would put the hair down it.
Go away.
But you know, I pass myself on anybody, Morris. But I'll give you an example. He came over to me one night in Enniskillen. He was visiting someone in the hospital. I was in a local pub, and he came over. He says, "You don't mind me selling tickets?" I says, it's not my pub. But he knew he was in an area of a pub that he shouldn't be in. And he says, "It's for children's thing, So I put my name on it. And just put my name, and it said mobile number. I put my mobile number on it. I got a call 4 days later from him. And he says, "You don't mind me ringing you?" And I says, "Who's that?" "It's Charlie. And I says, "All right, right. I swear you have a mobile number. I got off the ticket. And he says, "All right, what can I do? I was just looking, what price do you oil?" And that's all he said. It just shows you the way he was thinking.
Imagine.
And made me think, Morrison, you're doing innocent enough putting your mobile number down.
Yeah.
But he was thinking.
That's amazing.
He was thinking.
Doris, before I go, can I ask you, you were just saying that that Enniskillen bombing, that it was, did you go in and check, not you, sorry, but did you say that there was the dogs went in to check to see if there were any?
Yeah, for they don't clean. His brother.
Was it your brother?
He'd been one of the. Was he one of the dog hangers that day? I knew his dog hanger. That's a different brother now.
Oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But imagine, and he was in there the day before.
They go out in the morning first thing.
It's amazing, isn't it? Just
yeah. And that's the year. Funny, that's the 87. That's the year we got married. We got married on the 20th of April.
Right. Yeah.
20th of April that the year, and then the bomb was the 8th of November 87, so that was the year we got married, so we did.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And a good friend of mine Dougie, he was the photographer that day,
yeah,
and he would take photographs for the battalion,
yeah,
and he was just walking past the war memorial. The bomb went off, but he was in a position that the war memorial saved him. All he got was dust on his shoulder. That's all he got.
People around him killed.
Aye, people around him. Because he was, the whole stuff come, and he was just happened to be at the centre half, and it just happened to align and that's all hit and we're all around him. You know, remember Joan when he brought his jacket home and the dust was all over the jacket, so it was. But we come home that day. And our neighbour Jimmy was involved that day too. But
I heard a thud, but it was like a bin lid or something gone down, or like a coal bunker lid gone down, you know what I mean? And then the word came through there was a bomb. There's no mobile phones then to contact anybody. You had to wait to see who was coming home.
That's true. And so you were worried about your...
I didn't really know what had happened until he came home and explained the whole thing. I didn't know what had happened.
No.
And you were saying he was covered in white dust.
Oh, I am juggy,
Just,
but you were so glad, like we know people who actually pull people out. We know people who are physically hands-on involved.
And so how do you feel now? I mean, are you still? I know when you deliver Isle Donner on the border, you say you're actually still nervous. Do you think that all these problems are still just scratch the surface and they're there?
You know. The way the peace thing has gone, Mars, I think they're still there. Decommissioning. Decommissioning was a joke. It's like me going to you, right, Mars? I want all your guns, and you come out with 12 to me. How do I know you don't have 24? There's no marking off what they had, you know. And this is the decommission, but. You know, that area we worked in, there were dedicated men. Look, 21 men took over a checkpoint. 21 terrorists. And that man that I was telling you about, he was involved in that. There's no question. With a flamethrower. And there were hardened men. You know, you have to give... Nobody said to me, that fellow was chatting about it. He says, it's the funniest war we always had up here. And I said, what's funny about it? Irish men killing Irish men. And that's what he was saying. You know, any other time you look at IS, it's all different. It's a different beliefs.
But that's interesting. You brought up. So, do you see yourself as an Irishman then, or do you see yourself?
I find Irish British, because all is now. They call me. You know, they used to call me the Southern Protestant. That's what all the sort of Irish nicknames. Here's the Southern Protestant coming. You know, in that way.
Yeah.
So do know what. But you know, it was a funny old war. We brought our two eldest ones, Jenny and Ding. I was saying, we were just chatting, go back on what I was saying about Jenny. Remember Jenny doing a project in our school doors, and that my daddy was in the army, and the teacher says, "Your daddy's not in the army. Your daddy's a farmer." And even the teacher believed that I was a farmer and didn't think, "Well, my daddy was in the army."
So, how many people have you spoken to about? Your experiences?
Like, I was spoken to people off and on, you know, just general, you know, the relatives down in the south would like to talk, like to talk about it, and then...
But you've never documented any of this before?
No.
So I'm very happy that you're obviously telling me your story.
Thank you,
Mervyn.
Yeah.
And Doris, it's exciting to... I mean, you were telling me that you work in Stormont, or that you...
Did. Yeah. Just when we were talking about the residency conditions for the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
And that's why I was saying, because then there was a residency condition and it'd be coming to the country they had to satisfy, whereas that's lifted now.
Yeah.
Which is why people have voted for Brexit, you see, because they don't want... They thought the borders would close in again.
And so, and would you like the idea of a hard border again, or a soft border? How do you see it?
It's a joke. Talking about a hard border, my thing would be they were killing people, and they couldn't seal the border. So now they're saying they're going to seal the border because they're going to bring stuff across. They're not doing it. You know, they're not doing it. You're not. It was a hard border, Mars, but it was only a hard border to... You had seven checkpoints in Fermanagh here.
Yeah.
Seven checkpoints dotted around. And you had all your wee back roads and everything. As a man said to me one time there only about a month ago, what I says, what do you think? Bring it on. Back to the old days, smuggling. And bring that's all. And that, there's money being made. And back, I remember one time I was my mother getting, we bought, and you think it was hundreds of years ago, we used to get butter across. My mother always wanted free state butter, and I says, I remember we had a checkpoint up at Garrison, and I says to the boy, could you get a box of butter? And we going down one night, and funny, I deliver oil to that house now. I said, you remember the night we come down with my mother to get a box of butter that you brought across from the south of Ireland? And you think we're old people, like I'm only 53, so you know, you think you're talking. you know, in a way.
It's not that long ago.
It's everything's fresh in your mind.
Yeah.
But the Brexit thing, you know, there will be no hard bother. You know, there can't.
Yeah.
You know, there's too much more below us. And I think with the peace thing, even if they weren't getting big money,
They
wouldn't be together.
Yeah.
Money talks and everything, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I find now. But, you know, I know a lot of people say, oh, it's terrorists. It's terrorism in government. But, you know, the only thing I was against, and back to that dog warden man, one of them boys got jail. And with a good Friday agreement, that man's out. Walking about now.
Yeah. And you're unhappy about the idea that these prisoners are released.
Do the crime, do the time. That's, the, you know, they should have done the time, you know, because they did. You know, it's no good letting them change. You know, they didn't. That poor dog warden, he, like Eric's walking about in a walking stick because of that time. That terrorist walking about a bleak. And he could meet Eric in Inniskillen. So he could, you know, that man's walking about. And when Eric went up, they got some of the terrorists that Gerard has arrested them. And Eric was flew into Dublin. And they come out in the best of suits, and he was the criminal. Hawk, we only wanted to talk to him. They come out with guns, and that's what they were saying. They only want to talk to him.
Imagine.
Yeah, they wanted to interview him. That's what they
said. That's what they always say. So, did you see the light at the end of the tunnel? Did you see it coming to an end when you were there after the, you know, all these bombings? The only thing,
Mars, would have been that the loyalists started getting ruthless. The lawyers started playing at their trick. They were being ruthless, and they were like the example was Greysteel Trick or Treat. They went into one night into a Halloween pub and just shot whoever was in there. And they were playing. And I think there was a fear starting to get in the IRA. Prime example was Joe Mills. When Joe Mills was shot, those Catholic pubs, no one would sit close to the window because they thought there was going to be a retaliation for it. And we thought it too.
Yeah.
That, but thankfully not. But I think they started to play about, and they had to do something because
the decision was made for everybody.
You know, they had to do something about it because
you
know the IRA thought they got far more now.
Yes.
Than they got during the Troubles. They got like each checkpoint costs 1.3 million, and I remember going out one night with a boy to put our cameras up, and I says, "This is wild money." No, he says, "It's only a tank, price of a tank, that's all, 7 tanks around the ball." That's the way the MOD looked at.
Is it right?
Aye. So he says, "Send the tank out to one of the wars, hit with Scud, that's gone." You know, that's the way they looked at.
That was the mentality.
That's the way the British government looked at. You know, it's a pity British soldiers shot over here. You know, they didn't like the British here, and so they took them, or like the paratroopers was a prime example, and Marines was another battalion coming into Fermanagh. You know, them checkpoints, it was a thorn in their side. You know, but you know, you had the work out a pattern of life with what they're doing. And the whole thing is, don't set up a path on yourself for the part-time or yourself, you know. The more target the poor part-timer, because he was the one that set up. Like I didn't have a pattern. You could go and come and go, but the poor part-timer or the postman, remember posting the a man outside in Skilling, they post a letter to address, no one that he'll be there with the letter, and that's how they got him.
Yeah,
you know, posted a couple of days ago.
So you have the letter here that the threat letter that your father got.
Yeah, there's no.
Would you mind reading it?
No bother. There's no date. When my father passed away, we just were looking through his wallet, and we come across this threatening letter, and it's a small bit of paper, and it says, it's written saying, "Mr. Byers, you are warned, and you are warned is on the line that if you continue to carry out your present anti-Catholic activities, as R G no one D to us, you will regret it, my dear Thomas R, and you'll go down quicker this time to Derry. You are warned," and it is wrote in Irish here, "Cumla na ban na era." So that was my brother probably could get a date on that. So if you want to, I can get you a copy of that, Anya.
That's amazing.
Isn't it?
That is amazing. Well, Mervyn, listen, thank you very much for talking to me. And I hope we can talk again. Doris, thank you too.
No problem.
Thank you.